The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Everyone, and welcome to IMC. So, one of the very gratifying questions that people will come to me with is how do I bring my practice into my daily life, into my life? And it's a very nice question. It's very nice that they have a sense that the practice is relevant for their life. Maybe what happens in meditation shouldn't just stay in meditation, but should somehow spread into the rest of their lives. And there's all kinds of things that could be said in response to that question. Maybe everything we ever teach is in response to that question in some way or other. And we could say things like, meditate every day, or practice meditation as you are, not meditation, but be mindful of your speech as you speak. That if you want to really supercharge your everyday practice and daily life, pay careful attention to why you say what you're going to say. And you'll learn a lot about yourself, and you'll learn how to be present in a much clearer way. Or it might be as simple as if you're driving a car, or if you're on the bus or a train, that don't do anything else, but just sit there and collect yourself. Be really present for that experience. Don't read a book if you're driving on the bus, or don't listen to the radio or a podcast, and just really be there to simplicity of driving. And so you're beginning to kind of bring that sense of presence into your life rather than constantly multitasking or doing two things or something. Or a person might say, you should practice the precepts. Try to be ethical. And ethical life will help, bring it in and open up all kinds of important things. So a person could say that. And another thing that, in response to the question of how do I bring my practice into my daily life, into my life, is to say, that's a nice question. But it's not really the best question. A better question is, how do you bring your daily life into your practice? So rather than putting the onus on your practice, your poor practice, you have to kind of somehow muster it up or adapt it or change it or apply it. And there's a work of practice so it fits into your everyday life. Instead, how do you fit your life into your practice means how you are when you're practicing, the state of practice, the state of presence, integrity, wholeness that comes with practice, that actually is the center of gravity. That's actually what has priority. That's what's most important. Your daily life is, it's just a hodgepodge of all kinds of things. But we tend to prioritize it because we have a lot of desires and a lot of things we want, a lot of protection we want, all kinds of things we want in our daily life. And sometimes we prioritize it, and it makes some sense. But I think what I see with people who've practiced for some time and really gotten into the practice, the things gets reversed, and what's most central to them is the experience of being alive that comes out of the practice. Sense of integrity, wholeness, the way of connecting to the world, the way of being is so important that they don't want to compromise that for anything that's going on in the world. And that's a radical thing to say. Not to compromise the state of your mind, your heart, state of being that you have in practice for anything going on in the world. In a way that may be not quite as radical as that, is to say that there's no benefit you can do the world that requires you to sacrifice your inner peace and well-being. There's certainly a lot of benefit we can do to the world and things we should take care of in the world, for sure. It's not saying we shouldn't do those, just sit and meditate and smile. But none of that requires us to sacrifice peace, well-being, happiness here. Shouldn't say it again, still another way. Why should you suffer so that other people don't suffer? why are you more important? Are you less important than anybody else? It isn't that Buddhism is selfish, that, you know, you're supposed to just take care of yourself, but you're not supposed to discount yourself. Your well-being is just as important as any other individual's well-being. And there's no need to sacrifice what's here. It's possible to take care of the world and other people with this presence, this experience, this freedom that's found here. So as practice develops for people, there are some people then who turn that question around. And they ask the question, how do I fit my life into my practice? So both questions are good, but I kind of like the second one, especially since the people tend to ask the first one. And my job is to try to give you different perspectives. And so I would like to give a little different perspective for all this. It's kind of same similar thing. Rather than bringing your practice into your daily life, make your daily life, turn your daily life, how you are in daily life, into something that your practice wants to enter. Make yourself in daily life a kind of person, live a kind of life where your practice will naturally flow into it and fill it. So then now the onus is on you, not the practice. The onus is on how do you live your life? How do you conduct yourself in your life so that there's space, there's time, there's goodness, there's a kind of way of being that whatever is happening in meditation, whatever is opening up for you in practice, it just wants to go there. It just like feels so welcomed. It feels like this is the best place to go. It's just ready to fill you. How do you make yourself so who you are welcomes the practice? Now we're talking about getting into hard work. The practice will take care of itself into your life if you begin to adjust your life. Now, this kind of involves, among other things, it involves a change of behavior and a change of attitude. And some people don't want to change their behavior. And the question that, how do I bring my practice into my daily life, literally for some people means, how do I do it all, and maybe even more, running around, being busy, doing everything that has to be done, more this and more that, and racing between one thing and another. And how do I bring my practice into that so that I can be centered, calm, whole, so I can be free? Perhaps the answer is you can't. If you're running around greedy or wanting or trying to do so much, that's operating from the very principle, the very way of being that the practice is supposed to free us from. So to try to get everything, some people want to have everything, and you can't. One of the wise ways of living for some of us, we live in a society for some of us who are pretty privileged. We live in a society, we have a lot of choices. And we have a lot of messages about what we should be doing. Whether it's obligations to save the world, whether it's to explore more recreational opportunities, whether it's to do more spiritual practices. You know it's un-Buddhist to do too much Buddhism? If what that means, you're just doing more and more and more things, just getting busy. You know, I've known people who just get busy, you know, go to this sitting group and read this book and do that practice and then do that practice and then go to that teacher. And they're just like racing around, filling themselves more and more and more with Buddhism. That, you know, too much Buddhism is non-Buddhist. So the idea is sometimes we have to change our behavior. And that's hard, because sometimes the demands of the world, sometimes all the authority of things that should be done, all the wonderful and important good things that we can do, all the good intentions we have and all that, is just literally too many things. It just, you know, you can't just kind of try to fill your day with all the possible good things that's available that you can do, the helpful things for the world. A wise life doesn't try to fill everything that we can possibly do, but does a fewer things so we could do it better. So that we do it in the way that the practice comes along. We're not out of breath. We're not racing from one thing to the other. So there's a little bit of time before and after we do something to catch our breath, to pause, to have a cup of tea, to just be. And lo and behold, if you take that kind of time, or if you do things carefully, which in my mind means you just do one thing at a time, then the practice wants to come into that, if your practice is strong. It'll just show up for you. And you'll find that you're present, you're sensitive to how you get caught and how you're free, and there'll be a prioritization for being free rather than caught up in your things. You'll feel and notice when you're being mean, and what it's like to be compassionate and caring, and your system will want to go towards being caring and compassionate. It's a lot of work to be mean. It's a drag if you really pay attention to it. Your system really doesn't want to do that if you really take the time. But if you're harried and running around and busy and, you know, can be quite, seemingly quite satisfied to be mean on the fly. Now that's maybe why people do it. But to settle down and be present and relaxed, of course you'll be different. So sometimes a wise life means to look at your life and change your behavior. Stop trying to do so many things. Try filling everything. Stop trying to race through things so you can get to the next thing. Stop maybe some of the multitasking that goes on. Sometimes maybe maybe it's fine to do two or three things at once. It's not like necessarily a sin to do that. But is that, if the question is, and this is the big if, this is the conditional background for this, what I'm talking about, if what you want is to have your practice in your daily life or your practice flow into your daily life and form your daily life, if that's what you really want to do, that comes at a cost. That has certain requirements, has certain things that, and one of that is changing your behavior, changing how you live your life to some degree. And perhaps doing fewer things, but allowing the practice to fill what you do, brings a much greater treasure to your life than all the pleasure of doing many things, all the gratification of getting all kinds of worldly success. Worldly success, doing a lot of things, in a sense, is kind of only skin deep. But if how you are from the inside out is where your satisfaction comes, where your inspiration comes, then, you know, that's a treasure that not only you carry with you, but becomes a gift to other people. For people to encounter someone who knows how to be happy and at peace with themselves and be engaged in the world that way, that shows everyone, well, then that's possible. I thought I just had to kind of be out of breath to kind of have some kind of success. And you've probably met people. I've met people who, you know, when they're somewhere 45 years old, 55 years old, they think, wait a minute, there's no end to this pattern I'm in, that there's always something next. I have to get that. Recently I met someone who had a very successful life, not financially, but very successful in certain enterprise, actually doing a lot of good for other people, kind of a activism role. And she said that in my kind of activism, most people don't have much success. But I had a fair amount of success and became a little bit of a superstar in my little domain. But at some point I realized I wasn't happy. And I was just shocked. And if this didn't make me happy, and I had success, where was my happiness going to come from? So she took a whole break for many years in her life to do practice. And after doing practice some years, she went back and was of service in a very different way. So you know, behavioral change. How do we make ourselves so that our practice is welcomed into the space? I love it that this is a little bit of, you know, a twist of the ancient epithet or the title of the Buddha. Some of you know him, he's the Tathagata, the Thus Come One, kind of strange name. He was reluctant to identify himself in the identities and that were common in his time, or, you know, have some kind of identity, or take things personally in certain ways. So he had these titles for himself that kind of shattered the usual kind of identifications that people lived with in his time. And one of them was the Sugata. And gata can mean to come, like to arrive, and su can mean good or well. So the welcome one. So the little twist I like in it, the Buddha is the welcoming one. And so we're supposed to become the welcoming ones too. And so that's a change of attitude. How do we become the welcoming one? How do we become the one who welcomes, maybe first and foremost, welcomes ourself? Have you ever been really felt welcomed by someone? I had a grandmother and a great-grandmother, actually, both of them, who I felt so welcomed by. I felt so loved and cared for and not imposed on. And it was just like this field of goodness to sit with these two women. And sometimes I would just sit with them, just to be with them. And my great-grandmother in particular, she didn't talk much. But she was like, you know, radiant. It was like darshan sitting with her. And you know, really felt welcomed. Maybe you've welcomed someone. Maybe it's second nature for you if some lover, some family member, some wonderful benefactor you've had over your lifetime that comes to see you, that you're welcoming for them. Maybe they come over to your house, and for them, you clean your house. For them, you make sure that there's some nice things to offer them. Some nice tea, some nice lunch, something like you maybe even take a shower before they come. You know, you wouldn't still be in your pajamas. And maybe for them, not only that, but you would, you know, maybe you would even kind of, you know, be refreshed and make sure you were kind of not harried and just out of breath. You arrive just at your door just before, you know, 30 seconds before they come there. You'd be prepared for them. You'd be welcoming them. So this idea of this attitude of welcoming that allows the practice to flow into you, can you welcome yourself in the same way? Can you have an attitude of welcoming to yourself? And what would it take to be welcoming? For some people, it means not being so critical, not being at war with oneself, not feel that some of the things we did in the past are unacceptable, that we have to hate ourselves for it, or we have to feel a tremendous weight of the guilt. Or to not to feel that somehow how we are on the inside is wrong. It might not be right, but it doesn't have to be wrong. Be welcoming to this too. Be welcoming to this too. When I was, when we were young, I wasn't young, but young parents, we had, many of my kids were, I don't know, my son was maybe, I don't know if they were, these kids were talking yet. They were sort of pretty young, maybe a year and a half or something, or a year and 9 months. And they had play dates with different kids. And there was one kid who would had this issue of biting and hitting other kids. And so, you know, we'd have play dates, but, you know, I had to take this into account. And but the parents of this kid also were quite concerned about this. So they went to a therapist, a child therapist, and explained the behavior. And the child therapist said, whenever your son starts doing this, just love him a lot. Go over there and hug him, love him. But we can't do that. It's going to be positive reinforcement for that behavior. You have to be strict or something. No, 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 trust me. Just go and just love the kid. And sure enough, the behavior stopped quickly. It wasn't positive reinforcement for this kind of behavior. It actually was the very thing that healed it. Who knows exactly what the kid was trying to accomplish, needed to happen, what was sense of hurt or loneliness or being scared or something that the little kid had. But so the parents were welcoming in a certain kind of way. So what goes on? You know, all of us have some kind of, I don't know what your favorite word is. I like foible. That seems kind of, you know, the Buddha, in English at least, Buddha didn't seem to speak English, but if he spoke English and read his translations, he would say, we all have blemishes. So that's not so bad, right? Just a blemish. So we have all these blemishes. We kind of don't have to be so heavy with all these things that we have. In a certain way, be welcoming it, who you are and all of who you are, not to give into it, because some of these things shouldn't be said and shouldn't be done. That comes inside of us, comes from us. But be welcoming it into our hearts, into our awareness, so maybe it can relax and settle. So that the underlying kind of hurt, the underlying wound that we carry, gets met and held and relaxes. How do we welcome so that we don't see anything about ourselves as being wrong, but allows something to flow and move and heal within us? So this idea of being a welcoming one. To be a welcoming one for ourselves will translate directly to being a better welcoming person for other people. To be able to do the same thing for others. And when we meet people who are difficult, rather than feeling that, you know, shutting down, the art of learning to step forward and open up and welcome them. Many people don't have that ability, never had models for that, or maybe had good reasons in their lives not to do that because they've been hurt and harmed, betrayed. But how do we learn how to stay safe and welcoming to all things? Be welcoming here. And develop a street smarts to do that. We start, I would like to say, with ourselves. And as we learn this welcome, what do we do in our daily life? How do we live our daily life? Not only so there's a little more time and space, but so how we walk through our daily life, we're living a way, we're creating a daily life that is welcoming. Welcoming of our practice, welcoming of our goodness, welcoming of the freedom and the compassion, the love, the care, the integrity that we can find inside of ourselves. Where mindfulness just wants to come, rather than mindfulness being work, mindfulness becomes more our natural expression. It's just who we are. We're aware, we're attentive, the awareness is there. So instead of asking the question, how do I bring my practice into daily life? How do you make your daily life be welcoming for your practice? How do you do the equivalent in your life of cleaning your house, taking a shower, putting on nice clothes, having a nice treat, nice tea or something, so that when your beloved comes, the beloved feels happy and contented and received and honored and respected? maybe your beloved is your practice. And how do you prepare yourself, make yourself the kind of person that your practice wants to just come and relax and be with you? So this is a little different message than we usually get, I think, where the idea is to, we kind of depend on the practice to solve everything for us. And we don't want to have to be the one who has to do something, because that's the whole problem. We're always doing, doing, doing. And anyway, if I'm supposed to do something, it must mean that I'm wrong. It must be a judgment against me, and, it's kind of like, just do practice. Just practice, be mindful, be mindful. So you don't have that burden of having to do anything. And if you have to do it, then you can fail. And then you can have expectations. And then someone's measuring you. So we say, don't do any of that, we say. Just practice, just be mindful. It's wise to give that advice, but it also is, it also shortchanges us. It doesn't give us the full picture of what's possible. And I would like to suggest today that a wise Buddhist life is a life where we give thought, concern, reflection at the macro level of our life, what we're doing in our life, our behavior in our life, the activities we do, and the attitudes with which we do them, and in a reasonable way, consciously, intentionally, try to change some of those. Some of it can be quite small, maybe. Like, for example, maybe if you drive to work or take the bus to work, you actually leave 10 minutes before you have to. Or you take the earlier bus, if it's only 15 minutes, just so you're not hurried. And so you have a feeling of ease and relaxation. And maybe you come to where you get off out of your car, out of your bus, and you come there, and, it turns out it's a beautiful day and there's a rainbow. And rather than rushing and missing it, you take your time to take it in and feel the fresh air and look at the rainbow, and lo and behold, oh, that I feel kind of strange. What just happened? Oh, my practice showed up. I'm present. I'm aware. This is nice. Now I'm walking to work now across the sidewalk or the parking lot, and I actually feel like I'm really here and feel the ground, and this is pretty cool. Usually I come to work and I don't even notice I'm in the parking lot because I'm already imagining I'm at my desk and taking care of things, whatever. So to give thought, so that's an example of something very simple you can do. Just simply give yourself a little more time in order to do things so there's more space for the practice to show up. Or maybe it's a change of attitude. And sometimes we think attitude is so deeply ingrained in us, we're so identified with it, we don't think we can change it. But we change our attitudes all the time for important things. If you go to someone's memorial service, chances are fairly well you step into the memorial space with a little different attitude than you were yesterday at the basketball game. You go to a basketball game, you kind of get into a different attitude. You take it on. You're cheering your team on or something. But you don't cheer people on at the memorial service. not in that kind of way, at least. I was really struck by how my attitudes changed when I used to go into my kids' preschool. Especially if the preschool kids were napping. A couple of times I had occasion to go into the preschool when the kids were all sleeping. I mean, talk about sacred. Talk about pristine. Wow. Shh. I don't want to wake them up. It's just like so good. It's like the embodiment of goodness. 20, 3-year-olds sleeping. Boy, did I change my attitude quickly. We can change our attitude to some degree. we can't do it necessarily well or all the time, but the welcoming attitude is we welcome even when we don't do it well. We don't make it a burden or criticize ourselves and stop the war, stop the criticism. Be willing to be welcoming even of what is difficult inside of you, what's uncomfortable. Be welcoming. So as you do this practice, those of you, some of you here today might be pretty new to all of it. So I want to warn you, there's a real risk that if you get into this meditation practice and you discover something really good inside, something that teaches you that you're actually good, there's something wonderful way of being in the world, that you might, with that reference point, it might occur to you, I think I might have to change my life a little bit. That's the risk. Watch out. So those are my thoughts today. We can take maybe 5 or 6 minutes or something if anyone wants to protest.
Gail?
Yes?
You also welcome people to the tea. I forgot.
Oh, there's a tea. Oh, okay. Okay, well, let's take 5 minutes now. If you have any questions or comments about what I said or testimonials about it or...
Well, I have a foible where I cannot be on time. It doesn't matter. I'll get up a half hour earlier.
Yeah.
No, I will find distractions and things to do, and I will be walking out the door late. Now, when I walk out the door late, I don't rush. I just continue my, oh, well, here I am kind of thing. But I don't know how you do that.
So you mean that no matter how many things you have that day, whether you have just a few things or a lot of things, you procrastinate, you kind of take time, you don't actually show up on time.
Yeah.
Great. Do more.
Okay.
Schedule
yourself. Explain how I do that?
Schedule more into your day, but schedule things which are not that important. So that, and schedule them in between the important things. And then you realize, oh, I don't have time for that one. It's okay. But, using schedule books is actually a good thing to write, these calendar books. Write in a schedule what you're going to do. And schedule things that are not that important. And maybe you do them, and it's nice to do. But maybe that protects you a little bit for your way. Go ahead. You go ahead first.
Okay. thank you. I really appreciated this. And as someone who was feeling very harried on my way yesterday, it's like really struck true. Do you have any guidance on how, for someone who does lead that very busy life, and as I think about, okay, what can I take out to give myself a little more room? Any guidance on a practice of like how to do that? When many things feel important.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things, a couple of things to say. One is when there's a lot to do, some work. I used to be a fast order cook after I was in the Buddhist monastery. And I loved it. And, I was spinning around in the kitchen. I had multiple meals kind of tracking at the same time. And I would leave the kitchen calmer and more centered than when I came, rather than harried. And so you don't have to do things slow, but don't hurry. You can be fast, but don't hurry. Never hurry. If you're ever hurrying, you're already lost. Figure out how to be fast if you need to be fast, but don't hurry. Hurry is an attitude. But be fast, and then the idea of just doing one thing at a time is really powerful. Now, when I was a fast order cook, the one thing at a time was only cooking all those dishes. I wasn't listening to the radio or doing other things. I just gave myself over to the activity I had to do. And so, if you can do one thing at a time, or just give yourself over completely to the activity you're doing, even if it's a lot of different things. Just give yourself over just to do that. So you're not thinking about the future, the past so much. You're not, trying to get other things in, or, and nowadays, you're not going to check. Don't check your phone. You know, leave your phone in another room, so you're not even tempted, because that's a way of dividing up your, getting. So just doing one thing at a time. So maybe the last one.
I really appreciated your bringing to mind your welcoming grandmothers and great grandmother. And so that it brought to mind some people in my life that were that way, and to consider that towards our practice. And in my daily life, one of the opportunities I have over and over again is with my cat, and it is to make myself welcoming to my cat as my cat comes up to me, and we spend time together. And it is such a strong and deep experience. And so being able to take that essence and bring it towards how I welcome my practice, I appreciate the instructions.
Nice. Imagine sitting down to meditate and greeting yourself in meditation the way your dog greets you. Wag your tail. Great. So thank you. So we have a few minutes before the usual ending, and we do have the tea, so you're all welcome to stay and socialize and talk. But as it's a tea, I'd like to ask maybe if you'd turn towards one or two people next to you and say hello, and maybe say just a one simple good idea that you got from this talk for yourself, or some provocative and nice idea, and just share that with your partner, and you can go after that or stay for tea.